Chapter 3. For appearances and meeting with a time and place suggesting the custom, to others than ourselves, at least, if known. I am sure that this decision will not disturb you much, that you will understand my modern feelings, and think no worse of me for them. And dear, if it were to be done, and we were unfortunate in it, we might both have enough old family feeling to think, like our forefathers, and possibly your father, that we could not marry honorably, and hence we might be made unhappy. However, you will come again shortly, will you not, dear Jocelyn? And then the time will soon draw on when no more goodbyes will be required. Always and ever yours, a vice. Jocelyn, having read the letter, was surprised at the naivety it showed, and at a vice and her mother's antiquated simplicity in supposing that to be still a grave and operating principle which was a bygone barbarism to himself and other absentees from the island. His father, as a moneymaker, might have practical wishes on the matter of descendants which lent plausibility to the conjecture of a vice and her mother, but to Jocelyn he had never expressed himself in favor of the ancient ways, old-fashioned as he was. Amused therefore at her regard of herself as modern, Jocelyn was disappointed, and a little vexed, that such an unforeseen reason should have deprived him of her company. How the old idea survived under the new education. The reader is asked to remember that the date, though recent in the history of the Isle of Slingers, was more than 40 years ago. Finding that the evening seemed lowering, yet indisposed to go back and hire a vehicle, he went on quickly alone. In such an exposed spot the night wind was gusty, and the sea behind the pebble barrier kicked and flounced in complex rhythms, which could be translated equally well as shocks of battle or shouts of thanksgiving. Presently on the pale road before him, he discerned a figure, the figure of a woman. He remembered that a woman passed him while he was reading a vice's letter by the last lamp, and now he was overtaking her. He did hope for a moment that it might be a vice, with a changed mind. But it was not she, nor anybody like her. It was a taller, squarer form than that of his betrothed, and although the season was only autumn she was wrapped in furs, or in thick and heavy clothing of some kind. He soon advanced abreast of her, and could get glimpses of her profile against the roadstead lights. It was dignified, arresting, that of a very Juno. Nothing more classical had he ever seen. She walked at a swinging pace, yet with such ease and power, that there was but little difference in their rate of speed for several minutes, and during this time he regarded and conjectured. However, he was about to pass her by when she suddenly turned and addressed him. Mr. Pearson, I think, of East Quarriers? He assented, and could just discern what a handsome, commanding, imperious face it was, quite of a piece with the proud tones of her voice. She was a new type altogether in his experience, and her accent was not so local as a vice's. Can you tell me the time, please? He looked at his watch by the aid of a light, and in telling her that it was 7:15 observed, by the momentary gleam of his match, that her eyes looked a little red and chafed, as if with weeping. Mr. Pearson, will you forgive what will appear very strange to you, I dare say? That is, may I ask you to lend me some money for a day or two? I have been so foolish as to leave my purse on the dressing table. It did appear strange. And yet there were features in the young lady's personality which assured him in a moment that she was not an impostor. He yielded to her request, and put his hand in his pocket. Here it remained for a moment. How much did she mean by the word some money? The Junonian quality of her form and manner made him throw himself by an impulse into harmony with her, and he responded regally. He scented a romance. He handed her £5. His munificence caused her no apparent surprise. It is quite enough, thank you, she remarked quietly, as he announced the sum, lest she should be unable to see it for herself. While overtaking and conversing with her, he had not observed that the rising wind, which had proceeded from puffing to growling, and from growling to screeching, with the accustomed suddenness of its changes here, had at length brought what it promised by these vagaries rain. The drops, which had at first hit their left cheeks like the pellets of a popgun, soon assumed the character of a raking fusillade from the bank adjoining, one shot of which was sufficiently smart to go through Jocelyn's sleeve. The tall girl turned, and seemed to be somewhat concerned at an onset which as he had plainly not foreseen before her starting. "We must take shelter," apostrophe said Jocelyn. "But where?" apostrophe apostrophe said she. To windward was the long, monotonous bank, too obtusely piled to afford a screen, over which they could hear the canine crunching of pebbles by the sea without. On their right, stretched the inner bay roadstead, the distant riding lights of the ships now dim and glimmering. Behind them a faint spark here and there in the lower sky showed where the island rose. Before there was nothing definite, and could be nothing, till they reached a precarious wood bridge, a mile further on, Henry VIII's castle being a little further still. But just within the summit of the bank, whither it had apparently been hauled to be out of the way of the waves, was one of the local boats called Larus, bottom upwards. As soon as they saw it, the pair ran up the pebbly slope towards it by a simultaneous impulse. They then perceived that it had lain there a long time, and were comforted to find it capable of affording more protection than anybody would have expected from a distant view. It formed a shelter or store for the fishermen, the bottom of the Larus being tarred as a roof. By creeping under the boughs, which overhung the bank on props to leeward, they made their way within, where, upon some thwarts, oars, and other fragmentary woodwork, lay a mass of dry netting a whole seine. Upon this they scrambled and sat down, through inability to stand upright. 1. 5. A charge, the rain fell upon the keel of the old Larus like corn thrown in handfuls by some colossal sower, and darkness set into its full shade. They crouched so close to each other that he could feel her furs against him. Neither had spoken since they left the roadway till she said, with attempted unconcern, "This is unfortunate." Apostrophe apostrophe, he admitted that it was, and found, after a few further remarks had passed, that she certainly had been weeping, there being a suppressed gasp of passionateness in her utterance now and then. "It is more unfortunate for you, perhaps, than for me," apostrophe he said, "and I am very sorry that it should be so." Apostrophe apostrophe, she replied nothing to this, and he added that it was rather a desolate place for a woman, alone and afoot. He hoped nothing serious had happened to drag her out at such an untoward time. At first she seemed not at all disposed to show any candor on her own affairs, and he was left to conjecture as to her history and name, and how she could possibly have known him. But, as the rain gave not the least sign of cessation, he observed, "I think we shall have to go back." Apostrophe apostrophe, never. Apostrophe apostrophe said she, and the firmness with which she closed her lips was audible in the word. "Why not?" Apostrophe apostrophe he inquired. "There are good reasons." Apostrophe apostrophe, I cannot understand how you should know me, while I have no knowledge of you. Apostrophe apostrophe, oh, but you know me about me, at least. Apostrophe apostrophe, indeed I don't. How should I? You are a Kimberlin. Apostrophe, I am not. I am a real islander, or was, rather. Dot dot, haven't you heard of the Best Bedstone Company? Apostrophe apostrophe, I should think so. They tried to ruin my father by getting away his trade, or, at least, the founder of the company did old Bencombe. Apostrophe apostrophe, he's my father. Apostrophe apostrophe, indeed. I am sorry I should have spoken so disrespectfully of him, for I never knew him personally. After making over his large business to the company, he retired, I believe, to London? Apostrophe apostrophe, yes. Our house, or rather his, not mine, is at South Kensington. We have lived there for years. But we have been tenants of Sylvania Castle, on the island here, this season. We took it for a month or two of the owner, who is away. Then I have been staying quite near you, Miss Bencombe. My father's is a comparatively humble residence hard by. But he could afford a much bigger one if he chose. You have heard so? I don't know. He doesn't tell me much of his affairs. My father, she burst out suddenly, is always scolding me for my extravagance. And he has been doing it today more than ever. He said I go shopping in town to simply a diabolical extent, and exceed my allowance. Was that this evening? Yes. And then it reached such a storm of passion between us, that I pretended to retire to my room for the rest of the evening, but I slipped out, and I am never going back home again. What will you do? I shall go first to my aunt in London, and if she won't have me, I'll work for a living. I have left my father forever. What I should have done, if I had not met you, I cannot tell. I must have walked all the way to London, I suppose. Now I shall take the train, as soon as I reach the mainland. If you ever do in this hurricane. I must sit here till it stops. And there on the nets they sat. Pearson knew of old Bencombe as his father's bitterest enemy, who had made a great fortune by swallowing up the small stone merchants, but had found Jocelyn's sire a trifle too big to digest, the latter being, in fact, the chief rival of the best bed company to that day. Jocelyn thought it strange that he should be thrown by fate into a position to play the son of the Montagues to this daughter of the Capulets. As they talked, there was a mutual instinct to drop their voices, and on this account the roar of the storm necessitated their drawing quite close together. Something tender came into their tones as quarter hour after quarter hour went on, and they forgot the lapse of time. It was quite late when she started up, alarmed at her position. "Rain or no rain, I can stay no longer," she said. "Do come back," said he, taking her hand. "I'll return with you. My train has gone." "No, I shall go on, and get a lodging in Budmouth Town, if ever I reach it." "It is so late, that there will be no house open, except a little place near the station, where you won't care to stay. However, if you are determined, I will show you the way. I cannot leave you. It would be too awkward for you to go there alone." She persisted, and they started through the twanging and spinning storm. The sea rolled and rose so high on their left, and was so near them on their right, that it seemed as if they were traversing its bottom like the children of Israel. Nothing but the frail bank of pebbles divided them from the raging gulf without, and at every bang of the tide against it the ground shook, the shingle clashed, the spray rose vertically, and was blown over their heads. Quantities of seawater trickled through the pebble wall, and ran in rivulets across their path, to join the sea within. The island was an island still. They had not realized the force of the elements till now. Pedestrians had often been blown into the sea hereabout, and drowned, owing to a sudden breach in the bank, which, however, had something of a supernatural power in being able to close up, and join itself together again after such disruption, like Satan's form when, cut in two by the sword of Michael, the ethereal substance closed, not long divisible. Her clothing offered more resistance to the wind than his, and she was consequently in the greater danger. It was impossible to refuse his proffered aid. First he gave his arm, but the wind tore them apart as easily as coupled cherries. He steadied her bodily, by encircling her waist with his arm, and she made no objection. Somewhere about this time, it might have been sooner, it might have been later, he became conscious of a sensation which, in its incipient and unrecognized form, had lurked within him from some unnoticed moment when he was sitting close to his new friend under the laird. Though a young man, he was too old a hand not to know what this was, and felt alarmed, even dismayed. It meant a possible migration of the well-beloved. The thing had not, however, taken place, and he went on thinking how soft and warm the lady was in her fur covering, as he held her so tightly, the only dry spots in the clothing of either being her left side and his right, where they excluded the rain by their mutual pressure. As soon as they had crossed the ferry bridge, there was a little more shelter, but he did not relinquish his hold till she requested him. They passed the ruined castle, and having left the island far behind them, trod mile after mile till they drew near to the outskirts of the neighboring watering place. Into it they plodded without pause, crossing the harbor bridge about midnight, wet to the skin. He pitied her, and, while he wondered at it, admired her determination. The houses facing the bay now sheltered them completely, and they reached the vicinity of the new railway terminus, which the station was at this date, without difficulty. As he had said, there was only one house open hereabout, a little temperance inn, where the people stayed up for the arrival of the morning mail and passengers from the channel boats. Their application for admission led to the withdrawal of a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.